This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, now in our sixth season, looking into the exciting happenings of Ipswich Town Football Club every week on video and audio. I'm Richard Woodard, and joining me for his first appearance since the win over Shrewsbury, hoping that he doesn't pull a hamstring in the intro, Craig Fimbo. Hello to Craig, and back in the team, consistent performer, always sevens or eights out of ten from him. Welcome back to Joe Fares. We'll start, Craig, with you. Belated Happy New Year. So your first appearance of 2021. How are you?
Oh, yeah. Loving life.
Yeah.
Enjoying being able to get out and about and doing everything that that we're allowed to. Mm-hmm. So luckily, you know, waiting for the weekend so we can enjoy the football to just take that stress out of the week that we've
escapism,
just enjoyed.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And Joe, you need to tell us about this for those of you who are watching in black and white. Joe, is this a limited edition goalkeeper shirt that you've managed to find a bargain in Planet Blue? Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's the 2015-2016 change third choice goalkeeper shirt that was only worn once away at MK Dons because their white kit clashed with our green goalkeeper kit, presumably. So,
and never put on general sale either.
Never put on general sale.
So no, that is unique.
Definitely a collector's item. Yeah. I bought it for either £10 or £15. I reckon I could probably sell it for at least a sort of 50 to 70p profit at the moment.
Yeah. Get on the eBay. Exactly right. I do like a goalkeeper third kit, but I do this maybe once or twice a season. If anyone has one of the Umbro keeper kits from the '90s, XL or L, who wants to sell me one, I'll write you a blank check pretty much, as long as it's in decent nick. So there's that advert, and I'm sure, actually, Joe, you're probably in the same boat, aren't you?
Rich can sleep in it and dream that he's Craig Forrest.
Exactly right. My favourite ever player. Craig, you've not got anything in the loft, have you, that I might be able to... That's
not,
quite an
not...
open-ended question, by the way. I didn't mean it to sound like that. Do you feed them? No, sorry.
I was going to say, certainly not in L or XL, because all my old stuff, even my little boy's now grown out of that, you know, when I was 5, 6, 7. I did have a pristine white Pioneer black pinstripe that he wore when he was 5 or 6 once or twice, and since growing out, he's now wearing, well, and he doesn't, cause he's not that interested in football at the moment, but when I can persuade him to, he wears the obviously the Lyle promotion kit that was mine and has passed down, so he just about squeezes into what I did when I was 15 16. He's doing now when he's 30.
That's some good parenting there as well. Gotta love some football hipster shirts, the originals. So you've got quite a collection, Joe, for your boys, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got loads of them. I just pick up when I see them off eBay. They're at an age where they like wearing them at the moment, but I'm sure they'll soon grow out of it once they sort of realise
they're a third division they're doing, team.
Once they appreciate they can have either Kane or Son on the back of it rather than Judge or Nolo.
Nolo. Yep. Well, I mean, I always say this when I'm not going to drag this one out, guys, unnecessarily. Obviously, the main topic of conversation today, the Burton victory. But frankly, it's probably more to delve into in the pre-match press conferences. It was a quote fest on Friday, not just from Lambert, from Stephen Ward. Let's kind of tie the week together. We're off the back, obviously, of that disappointing defeat at home to Swindon, live on the telly. The Sky Hoodoo is back. And Luke Wolfenden's insightful post-match. And more about Luke Wolfenden in a bit. And then Monday, this report from the Football Insider blog, which I think is fairly reputable, includes Darren Bent amongst its pundits, apparently, claimed that there is a dressing room mutiny and Marcus Evans is looking into possible replacements if Lambert were to be sacked. I guess I don't really want too much of your views on that. I think, well, unless you want to, you know, I think we can draw our own conclusions. Perhaps more interestingly is the rebuttals that have followed, not least from Paul Lambert, who says, "I'm pretty sure you can ask any player about it, and I've never had a falling out with them. I have a laugh with them. I'm a chilled out kind of guy. I never have any arguments with them. I tell them if I don't think they're doing well." The world is brilliant, isn't it? You read a tweet and you guys believe it. I can't do anything about that. And Stephen Ward, the spokesman of the dressing room, supposedly claimed, no, not at all. Everyone's behind the manager. We believe in the manager. We believe in his philosophies, more about his philosophies in a second, and what he wants us to achieve. But everyone here is completely on the same page. There's not one bit of disharmony, and everyone wants to achieve promotion. That's how it is. Well, that's me convinced. Joe, are you convinced?
Well, my views are, I live in Ipswich. It's quite a small town. I'm sure most people who live in the town sort of speak to people, and it is absolute bollocks, basically, that it's a United dressing room United behind Lambert. It might be United dressing room, but there is no chance that it is how Lambert says it. It just isn't the case. And like I say, I'm sure enough of our listeners have spoken to enough people involved in the football club to know that this just isn't the case. It's, like I say, it was terrible in the summer. I think it was hinted at by, like I say, you look on those sort of days, you see Phil's posts. Now he's persona non grata. You can see some of the stuff that Andy and Stu have hinted at and mentioned in podcasts. I say it doesn't take much reading between the lines to realise that it just isn't the case. It's not a good dressing room at the moment because the players seemingly neither like nor respect Lambert.
And Craig Luke Wolfenden's interview was pretty eye-opening on the excuses point. But I guess the Football Insider, as we said, I was at pains to mention that it's fairly reputable. I think there's guys involved who've previously worked for Sky there. Obviously, they've got, you know, I was going to mention Gabby Egbonhall, but they've got some good pundits as well. So they're a fairly reputable source. So therefore, they're not going to pluck this kind of story from thin air, are they?
Well, no, certainly. Well, you wouldn't think so. Certainly not for a League One team either, are they? It's not as if it's going to be headline news, you know, Premier League sort of level. It's interesting to hear that Lambert say he's never fallen out with players or doesn't fall out with players. Does someone want to see if they can get in touch with Jordan Spence and over in California, wherever he is, and ask him... ask if he's ever fallen out of it. Maybe Danasian as well.
Or Jordan Graham. Or Darren Bent. Or...
Yeah.
Going back to Wolfenden's comments, he, poor old guy, looked like a broken man, didn't he, in that interview after the match. And again, as Joe's saying, it doesn't take much to work out what's going on behind the scenes. It doesn't take much to work out who... If you listened or watched yesterday's match with no commentary, it wouldn't take much for you to work out who he's referring to in terms of comments being made or instructions being provided that are contrary to what the players think they should be doing. I think, Christ, it was pretty much a 90-minute soundtrack of Stuart Taylor gobbing off yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, you only have to listen back because on the Sky coverage, it had fake crowd noise against Swindon. But if you actually watch the highlights back, you hear everything being said. And as they pick up the ball in midfield for the first goal, all you hear is press, 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 which drags the whole team out of shape.
Yes. And Chambers becomes a scapegoat.
Well, like I said, it doesn't matter who the scapegoat is on it, but ultimately they're being instructed from the sideline to go and press. They go and press, and then they're just pulled out of shape.
Yeah. 5 minutes before the end yesterday, he felt the need to scream at international footballer Alan Judge to take the ball into the corner to waste a bit of time. I'm sure Judge may have worked that one out for himself, but if that's what he's there to do, that's what he's there to do.
Yeah. I had a pretty crap Friday work-wise, and then partway through the morning, was it in the evening or maybe Thursday night, it was Andy Warren's article saying that the EADT understands that Lambert retains the full support of Marcus Evans. I mean, how much we can read into these kind of things, you know. I'm sure perhaps when Paul Hurst was sacked or there was some support before the axe fell. But Lambert's press conference on Friday, I mentioned it at the start. I mean, it kind of had a real aura of kind of fake news and disingenuousness about it, which I think, I know, you can talk about Lambert's failings on the pitch, but obviously a lot of us, you know, we've talked about on the show, the patience has kind of run out with Lambert, and these kind of press conferences where he kind of gives a bit of bluff and
the bravado.
Yeah, exactly right. Is he confident? This is I'm quoting from TWTD. Is he confident Evans will continue to back him? I don't really care, to be honest. What do you do? I said to this last season, if Marcus says to go, you go. If Marcus says you stay, you stay. I don't have a problem. I get on really well with him. I don't really get involved in this stuff. And then we get the, you have to remember I was at the highest level of football. I know how it works. I've worked with unbelievable managers. No stress, no nothing. Pure stone cold focus on what I had to do. Are we all getting a little bit bored of Lambert? Is it actually in his interest maybe to not do press conferences or maybe for us to not read them? Because I don't think you learn anything new, do you? You just get the same old PR and spin.
He's getting to the point whereby, like it was towards the end of McCarthy's reign, and he's just doing it for the... Just doing it. He's dialing them in, as you'd say, isn't he? He's just going through the motions of answering questions in a certain manner. As you say, he's not offering anything. He's been popping up on Five Live more often than he's been popping up on local media, which is very bizarre. Why you'd ask Paul Lambert his opinion on anything particularly. I suppose it's because he had COVID and therefore was a bit more closer to it than most in terms of managers and the football side of things. But yeah, I didn't listen to his... I read the report in the EADT. I didn't go to the lengths of actually listening to it because it'd only end up winding you up.
I don't
more.
Think they actually have, they're available to listen to anymore, are they?
No.
I meant his like internal club one that.
Yeah, and EADT now do the transcript, don't they?
Well, yeah, exactly. As Joe's pointed out before, there's only one reason why the local rag starts putting the transcript of interviews.
Yes.
On their website or
it's
on kind
of
the
tick box of the kind of slow, inevitable. Ending, hopefully. As you mentioned, Lambert doing the rounds on Friday. I wanted to get your thoughts on the, you know, obviously we give our sympathy because he's obviously been really affected by COVID and is still coming back from his recovery, which we obviously, as a human being, we wish him well. Your thoughts on his opinions about football continuing to is morally wrong? It kind of
in the heart of the coronavirus crisis in March last year when it was all kicking off, he was the manager of the team that was desperate to carry on playing with the chairman trying to get a 10-team playoff put towards that sort of to allow us to give us any hope of promotion, and he was desperate for anything to happen, and now it's looking like he might lose his job because he's doing such a poor job at the moment. It's, we shouldn't be playing. Oh, it's morally wrong if we're playing. But say, if people have that opinion, I'm not saying it's the wrong opinion to have, but it also, there has to be an element of consistency to it. Me, I've always wanted football to carry on. I was disappointed it ended last year. I could understand the reasons, but I've ultimately wanted it to come back, and that's still the case. I think it does more good than it does bad, personally. But you can't just flip-flop around with what suits you at the time.
Yeah, and it does feel that Steve Bruce is another one who has come out and said that football should stop. And it does feel like the most vocal people are the ones who would benefit from maybe a pause to reset and recalibrate. Sorry, Craig, go on.
No, I was going to say, you know, as you say, a cynic may suggest that it's partly to do with having a season curtail before it turns to shit again, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Like I say, like Steve Bruce, Sam Allardyce, oh, I'm 64, I don't want to be out here, we need a circuit breaker, I don't want to be doing it. You accepted a job on in the middle of December. It's not like it's been forgotten about at this point. Yeah, it's not caught up on, sort of come out of nowhere, is it? And it's just a case of, like I say, and as it was through the whole process of COVID last year with regards to curtailing seasons, you really, really struggled to find somebody that wasn't just putting self-interest above of everything else with regards to finishing the season, carrying on the season, doing whatever they want. The teams that were in a good position wanted to finish it. The teams in a bad position wanted to carry it on. And it went all the way through the summer to the vote like that.
Just to finish off Paul Lambert quotes, and apologies if this is getting a little bit tedious for everyone listening. This is the last one. Craig, I wanted to come to you on this one because you lifted the quote out and posted it on the Blue Monday WhatsApp group and on Twitter, I believe, as well. Lambert talked about shifting from mass rotation to being more rigidly using his 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 system. And no plans to change. Quote, I learnt my lesson about 5 or 6 years ago, trying to change systems left, right and centre, and it never got me anywhere. I'll never do that again. I spoke to loads of managers and they asked me why I changed the system, and I said I was trying to get a win, but they told me it just confused people, and they were 100% right. And I'm talking about top managers, you know, not bottom managers or you know, middle managers. We're talking top managers. It conveniently forgot last season, right?
Oh my god. But surely as soon as he says that, doesn't that not just ring alarm bells in everyone who's in the press conference and reading, watching, listening, anything? It's completely contrary to what he did last year. Let's not worry about 5 or 6 years ago. What about last year then, mate, where you were changing it every match 2 or 3 times a week? It's just absolutely bizarre. He's got the front to come out and say it.
Is this the closest we've
got
to...
It's just a walking contradiction, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say,
everything he says is a contradiction, whether it's regards to tactics, transfers, policy, relationships. Everything he says is... It's just like he just says the first thing that comes into his head, and it's like he doesn't realise people have memories and sort of things what have happened. It's just a walking contradiction in everything he does.
But he doesn't care about it, does he, either? That's the thing. He's saying it. Bulletproof.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to say, is this the closest we've got to him admitting his failures from last season? It got us nowhere. Well, yeah, it got us 11th on points per game, mate. So anyway, let's just finish off the news by talking about some transfer business. As always, I don't know whether you guys are finding this as well, but I'm always constantly frustrated with how blinkered our transfer business is. Particularly in January, it appears we've identified two targets, no contingencies. We are only going over after these two targets from the Championship on loan. One is Luke Thomas, who continues to make substitutes appearances for Barnsley. Make of that what you will. The latest link this week is Matty Harrop from Preston North End, an attacking midfielder / wide midfielder. I mean, these are logical targets in positions perhaps where we need some support or some creativity. Josh Harrop, I made a mistake, sorry, I'm reading the wrong bit there. Josh Harrop from Preston North End. I'd quite like a fullback perhaps, but anyone want to give a take on this one? Danassian sounds like he's off to Accrington. Freddie Sears moved to Colchester, has had cold water pour on that. But yeah, Luke Thomas and Josh Harrop from Preston. Joe?
Well, it was interesting listening to the Kings of Anglia pod last week. It was either the Monday or Thursday one. And they said that Lambert's getting frustrated that we aren't getting these deals over the line. But we've also, we've decided to only target people that are effectively on the fringes of the teams in the Championship who are effectively match fit that will be able to come in and hit the ground running. So you're going after a player that, in reality, needs a couple of dominoes to fall above them for them to be able to be released. So I can understand the logic of wanting to sort of bring in players that match fit, because in January, we've seen it previously, you bring players in that aren't ready, and it takes to the end of the season before they're even sort of close to contributing, and it's just been an absolute waste of time. So these are the players you need to get, but ultimately they're either going to cost you more money and you're going to have to wait for them because teams just aren't going to give him up. Because, like I say, Luke Thomas came on again last night for Barnsley at Swansea, didn't he? Or at Barnsley against Swansea. And Harrop seems close. They've signed that Whiteman. That might move things up. But apparently it's definitely that we want both of them and see them both as starters. But when will the deals get done?
I guess, Craig, the frustrating thing for me is we're potentially paying a loan fee and or a large proportion of the wages for these two players. And you just wonder whether overall scouring the bottom end of League One or maybe the top end of League Two might yield a player just as good who is more likely to sign without having to play chess with other teams to get the deals done. Are you frustrated as I am that we appear to just have our pool that is so finite that once these deals don't happen, you know, where do we go next?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was just about to say, is that we're fishing in such a tiny pool, aren't we? You know, and that's been the case for however many years now. Our scouting is non-existent, as we all know. It's a relatively easy way out, is that there's no real commitment just to get a loan in, is there? If you buy someone, you're tied in, and if they could end up being a dud because you haven't done your due diligence and haven't done your scouting to find out if they are actually, you know, worthwhile signings, I suppose. But at least if you're getting a loan in, it's 6 months and then away you go at the end of it, regardless of the cost, I don't know. But it's all very well them coming in. But as Joe said, they've got to be fit and they've also got to be allowed to play in a way that, you know, makes it worth everyone's while, because, you know, there's no point bringing wingers in or attacking wide men in if they're going to be asked to sit in a flat five and across the midfield either.
But it is a narrow pool that we're fishing in, but that's because if you want to have a player that's going to come in and make an instant impact, which is obviously what we're targeting, there is a narrow pool. You're going to struggle to bring anyone in from the continent, especially with the Brexit rules with regards to where they need to be based and things. Generally, if you're signing someone from abroad in January, it's with a view on next season. Well, we're looking for this season, so we are stuck. And the players we want, Sunderland are going to want them. Lincoln might want them. Apparently, we were in for Morgan Rogers that went to Lincoln ahead of us. So you don't know how strongly we were in for him, or did we move too slowly? Who knows? But ultimately, the squad is good enough, in my view. Yeah, there's a couple of areas where we don't have it, but we have a full squad. We're only allowed to name 22 players. We have the 22 players. So if we bring in Josh Harrop, we're going to have to let one go. And it'll probably be Genoi Dinashian who we let go. And then you look at the squad. Kane Vincent-Young is nowhere to be seen. And you're expecting Luke Chambers at 35 to play every single game, Saturday, Tuesday, through that. And it's not just like, it's bonkers Saturday. It is literally every single Saturday and Tuesday for the whole of February and the whole of March. It's 9 weeks in a row where we've got a Tuesday game, and that's before any cancellations and other games need to be fitted in. And effectively, Ken Lock is miles off it, it seems, at the moment. We're just going to run Chambers or Ward into the ground until one of them breaks down, and then we're going to be screwed.
The side of Dinashian is really confusing given the lack of options at fullback. I'm shocked that we're not looking for someone who can play maybe both fullback positions. And Dinashian can play it, can't he? So why get rid?
Especially when the manager doesn't fall out with players as well.
Wow, exactly right.
Another reason why we're probably, potentially not looking for a signing as such is, you know, woe betide things get worse and the manager gets sacked. The next man in is lumbered with a player that he doesn't like.
Yeah, true.
Referring again to Genoi Dinashian, for example, you know, it may be that we make a change of manager, and because our director of football or head of footballing operations is a non-entity, toothless, with no authority position, then there's no continuity across the club, as we all know. So it's just going to be recycle and start again.
Yeah. Should we move on to more positive stuff? I feel like we've kind of... I feel like I need to, you know, give us a bit of a lift. Let's talk about a victory, gentlemen, albeit a victory with plenty of context. It's worth setting out, starting with the fact that it was Burton who we were facing on Saturday. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank back in charge after Jake Buxton was sacked, off the back of a 1-0 win against Gillingham last week, but only 3 wins all season, 51 goals conceded, and since the defeat at Portman Road, they've conceded 17 goals in 5 games and find themselves bottom of the division. We've talked about Ipswich off the back of their disappointing return to form, return to action, not to form, certainly, against Swindon. And guys, the talking point here is the massive changes for players that were reported to have returned training in midweek, and suddenly they're being thrust straight back into the action. Thomas Holy, we'll talk about him in the questions if that's all right, regains his place, his first appearance since the defeat to Hull. The back four, Ward, McGuinness, Chambers, Wolfenden, and his careless talk cost him a place in the lineup. And Toto Nsiala, out of nowhere since the defeat to Charlton where he went off injured, he returns in defence. Flynn Downs, no surprises, I guess, given he came off the bench against Swindon. He comes back in, his first start, though, since MK Dons, and he lines up alongside Andre Dizel. And then in our attacking midfield three, Bishop, his first appearance since Shrewsbury. Edwards, his first appearance since Portsmouth. And Alan Judge keeps his place. And again, similar to Downs, Norwood in, making his first start since Charlton. How many injuries were you anticipating us to pick up in the first half? And I guess, were you pleasantly surprised that that wasn't the case?
Well, we took a massive risk, didn't we? It was a team sheet born out of desperation for the management team to get a result. I don't think anyone could argue that, because the way that sort of Teddy Bishop's injury history has been, the way that James Norwood's recent injury history has been, Gwion Edwards has been out for a long time. But for those to come, for those to all come into the team in one go, and on a sort of a boggy pitch, wasn't the best pitch, was it, for them to all come in one go against a real sort of compact team was a massive risk. And I guess we'll find out in the next few days whether we've got away with it or not.
Yeah, Craig, I guess some interesting news off, well, not in the lineup. Jackson and Hughes, there's no place even for them on the bench. I think Jackson travelled, didn't he? I don't know whether Hughes did.
They both travelled.
What's your reading of that? It's a strange bench, because you'd think at least you've got Sears, Drinan and Hawkins on the bench there. Would you not have a central midfielder in there, given you've got Downs, who's just coming back, and Bishop potentially coming back, who might not last out?
Yeah, exactly. And we were told Nolan was fit. But Jackson played 90 minutes last week. Dobra played 80 minutes last week. Jackson played 90 minutes last week. And neither of them are even on the bench this week.
Dobra's got five of the last six games, and he's not even trained with the first team this week. Yeah. He's back down in the under-23s. So
Jackson played 90 minutes pretty much in row A of the Pioneer stand, didn't he? He was that wide. He wasn't even on the pitch. He was pretty much running along the gangway in front of row A of the seats. But he's just been completely bombed out. And I know, I appreciate when we brought, spoiler alert, brought Drinan and Hawkins on, it led to a goal. But they're both so similar styles of play. You think you need something a little bit different on
the
pitch.
They're the exact same type of player, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's very few occasions where you're going to need to use both of them, because
two target men, yeah.
Yeah, so it has to be, for me, it has to be Hawkins or Drinan and Jackson. It has to be, you have to go that way on the bench. You're just limiting your options. But I just don't see why. I see that sort of the need for it in some ways, but senior pros being dragged up to Burton and just being left in the stands, that sort of thing doesn't sit right with them, and that's the sort of thing that comes back to hurt you with regards to man management of them.
Sorry, Richard, as you were saying about needing new players, as Joe was saying, well, how big's your squad then if you've got Hughes and Jackson and Dobra not even on the bench, and you're still after even more players? Well, of course, it comes to a point where you've got to be getting a tune out of the squad that you've got, and certainly once everyone's fit, that first 11 yesterday was frightening, wasn't it? Should be in this division.
Yeah, well, we've got
look at all the players that were outside the 18 yesterday. Was Danasian in the 18? I don't think he was. Was he? Danasian, Wilson. I know they're injured. Skuse, Nolan, Jackson, Hughes, Elmazuni, Dobra.
That's a league
eight players
squad.
Probably start for most teams in this league. Not even in the 18, and we want two more players.
Yeah. Moving on to Burton. 4-5-1 from them. Worth mentioning a couple of signings for them. Hayden Carter comes in on loan from Blackburn, takes his spot in central defence. Sean Clare on loan from Oxford, and Josh Parker signed from Wickham, I think, having been on loan there, and giving hope to all of us in the latter stages of our 30s. Luke Varney, Leicester spotted Luke Varney on the bench at 38 years of age, player coached there at Burton. So good old Reg Varney there. Moving on to the action, I mean, I've not got a huge amount of chat. We'll talk about just before half time and the big chance that Burton have. But the only thing I've noted down here, guys, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, is Ntiala did a lot of good defending, albeit there was some last gasp defending that always makes me worried he's conceded a foul and a penalty, but some good interceptions. The sideways centre backs passing to each other approach appeared to have been shifted into something different, which was sending crosses in for no one. And in fact, in the first half, 14 crosses attempted, only two reached a Town shirt. That's a 14% success rate according to SofaScore. No shots on target, no big chances. What was your, before we talk about the Burton effort, your thoughts, Craig, on what you saw from Ipswich? It was underwhelming, wasn't it, to put it lightly?
As ever. Stat put a stat out, didn't he? Over the weekend, we haven't been leading at half time in 17 yeah. games. The last 17 league games.
Yep.
Games. Which is a record, a club record. And as Joe's pointed out, we're setting negative club records in the third tier of English football.
Yeah.
Something to behold.
The players returning from injury, I think Downs was probably decent, wasn't he? And
yeah, well, and
Edwards had moments, but maybe not enough.
Norwood looked good, didn't he, first off? Yeah. Bishop's first touch took him past one or two players, didn't he? He's literally his first touch of the game in the first 20, 30 seconds showed exactly why you want Bishop in the centre midfield, does it? It just gets you up the pitch. Well, in theory, it gets you up the pitch. I thought Edwards looked a bit rusty out of those three.
He contributed well defensively, Edwards, though, didn't he?
But... Yeah. But if you look at the heat maps, he didn't get anywhere near forward, did he? I think Chambers got a lot more forward than Edwards did, to be fair to him. Downs looked a bit off pace, but he would do because he hasn't been playing. So, as you said, Rich, you've got to hope that the minutes they did get in their legs yesterday will stand him in good stead for two difficult matches coming up.
Just before half-time, Ntiala heads wide from a kind of a looping, high-played corner from Dizel. That was a chance where probably should do better there. He's got above his man and is right in the middle of the goal, probably should get that on target. And then Chambers is the hero here. Edwards gets in behind, it's a looped ball into him. His cross kind of, I don't know if it deflects or it just loops up, and Holy kind of loses it in the air, it bounces off the bar. And Vernon is unmarked at the far post, and heroically Chambers, like a bodyguard, jumping across stage to catch the bullet, jumps in front of the ball at close range and prevents a certain goal. And that's half time, Joe, and I've not missed anything, have I? It was that unremarkable.
It was terrible. I tweeted at half time, we've had 60% of possession against a team with the worst defence in the league, probably one of the worst in the country. I haven't checked the other leagues, and we have not created one single chance. We had sort of a header drift wide from a corner. That was literally the sum of all our attacking contributions to that half.
And the second half really doesn't change too much. We've got this interesting moment on 55 where Norwood receives treatment, is the referee sends him to the side of the pitch, and then the fourth official gets all kinds of abuse. You can I think the clip has been put on Twitter, you can watch it back. Lots of F words, I don't know what that means, but lots of swear words. And Norwood gets booked for re-entering the field of play without the referee waving him on. That was a weird situation. The fourth official apparently said he could go on, and then the referee says no. I've not seen that before. I think I've seen a card, perhaps.
Yeah, old mate, he got sent off, didn't he, against us for encroaching, didn't he, before the... That was last season, wasn't it? He got sent off for the second yellow for doing that. But it's like 2 minutes beforehand, Norwood, if the camera went to Norwood, and he was just prone on one knee, wasn't he? Just sort of contemplating life and the futility of it. Or he didn't look injured. He was literally just on one knee in the middle of the half.
Yeah, and he was isolated.
Where it all went wrong.
I could have gone to Fleetwood.
I think it was quite clear, though, that the fourth official waved it back on the pitch. You could see the fourth official give him a sign on the TV coverage of it, and then Obviously, Norwood isn't happy that he's getting booked for it, but I think he might have even got a second yellow had he carried on much longer.
I was going to say, yeah.
But the fourth official clearly told him he can get back on the pitch, so you do have some sympathy with regards to it.
It was an interesting talking point in a game that lacked them, and then Norwood is subbed 5 minutes later for Aaron Drinan. There's a chance for Burton, but this is the moment, I guess, where the game, a period of Ipswich dominance really stemmed from this chance for Drinan. It's Chambers is twisting and turning down the right hand side. It's kind of a low cross that Bishop does really well, actually, to guide to Drinan, and he loops a header back across goal and hits the bar. And you kind of felt at that moment, Ipswich were finally getting on top, Craig. Well, you're looking kind of pensive at that remark.
Yeah, no, we were.
We were the better team at that point, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we were. Burton offered very little at the start of the second half. I wouldn't say we were carving them open, and that was pretty much the only chance we'd created before we scored. I thought Chambers did well yesterday. To be fair, I thought he was getting forward a lot more than he had been. In recent matches.
He got into I think he got beyond the goalkeeper, didn't he, in the first half?
Yeah, two or three times he did that. Yeah. So, but, you know, if you're relying on your 35-year-old fullback to create your chance, your one chance in the first 15 minutes of the second half, then read into that what you will.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Hawkins comes on for Bishop, and we go 2 up top, and immediately Craig, it's going to make an immediate, a real tangible impact, because Bishop will win a free kick down the left-hand side. And do you want to talk us through the action, as you recall it? It's a...
Yeah,
Judge
puts in his umpteenth shit cross of the match, doesn't he? And it luckily gets a deflection off a Burton defender, and it takes out the entire Burton team, pretty much the trajectory of the ball. And McGuinness is powering in at the far post to score his first goal. And that's pretty much that's all she wrote.
A rare set piece goal, and McGuinness should weigh in with more goals from set pieces. You're right about the set piece. Judge's free kick looked like it was destined to hit the first man. Well, didn't it? Because it then looped off of him. But it got to be in there.
I thought McGuinness played well yesterday again. I think he won a lot of headers, didn't he? Again yesterday, which is sort of what he does. Him and NCL, I thought both played well. Probably our men of the match, regardless of the goal.
Yeah, and the goal probably on the balance of play at that point deserved. And then John's got another effort. A header that goes down, he kind of heads it into the ground. The keeper gets down low, quick to save it. Garrett in goal there. Sears comes on for Edwards. I think that felt like a game too soon for Edwards, perhaps. Joe, your thoughts on Edwards?
Yeah, no, totally agree. I thought he did a lot of good work sort of coming backwards rather than going forwards yesterday, which I think is one of the things we've missed with having either sort of Dobber or Jackson on the flanks, the actual natural wingers out there who have the sort of nous and game smarts to defend. And I know Sears this season hasn't been particularly good going forwards, but ultimately Sears and Ward down the left and Edwards and Chambers down the right is when we've looked our most solid, because they've actually been able to get back and support their fullback and allow the fullback to get into attack with them. So yep, we'll see where we go going forwards with the wide roles, whether Edwards stays on the left, whether Sears comes back into the team. I don't know which way we'll go on that.
And last 10 minutes, this is the criticism, I guess, of this performance, and people tempering any kind of optimism about this win, because knowing Ipswich, there's always going to be a chance for the opposition. One is totally contrived out of nothing by Nsiala, who'd actually had a pretty decent game, actually, but he slices a clearance towards his own goal, which is pretty impressive, and Holy actually reacts quite well to save that. It's quite a good reaction save, given how close Nsiala is in there. But this is the chance. Aikens pulls the back ball across goal. I think it misses the forward, Hemmings, I think. And it's the new signing, Parker, who runs onto the ball and hits it first time. And really, with the whole goal to aim at, he should do better. But Town see it out, and that's a 1-0 victory. I wanted to know whether you agreed with Stuart Taylor's post-match opinions, because as much as we hear great things from the press conference and from Lambert, his number two also is quite the philosopher. Let's pick the right bit.
You said philosopher there, Rich, instead of bullshitter.
Yeah, sorry, they're synonyms of each other. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this last bit. Coming away from home, especially to Burton, keeping a clean sheet and getting a 1-0 result is fantastic. Fantastic. Especially with the way the league's going this season. Everybody can see people are dropping points all over the place, and it's very, very close. I think sometimes a 1-0 is better than a 5-0, because you're seeing the game out and you're showing that strength and defensive qualities. It was really pleasing to get one today. Joe, when was the... Do you prefer a 1-0 over a 5-0? Do you like that defensive... defensive qualities coming to the fore?
I can understand the point he's trying to make, that it sort of shows the sort of character of the team sort of digging their heels sort of in at the end of the game. But I'd rather a 5-0 personally.
Rather a 1-0 against Sunderland or Peterborough.
Well, just anyone good. A win against anyone good would be great.
Yeah, Burton, I wouldn't be. I'd be kind of thinking a 5-0 is probably what we should be expecting. But
the problem we have is that we don't beat any good teams in the league. So it means that there's so much pressure heaped onto these games against the teams at the bottom of the league. So when we lose one, like we did to Swindon last week, it is a disaster. Because if we don't beat the teams at the top of the league, you have to keep winning those bottom of the... And it made yesterday's game sort of harder than it should have been. And like I say, we didn't play well. We didn't create anything. It's not a performance to write home about. But you do have to give them some credit for sort of the way they did get the result over the line, with sort of players coming back, with a set-piece goal, with some good defending. Like you say, probably our three best players were probably Nsiala, McGuinness and Luke Chambers. And that's not really what you want away from Burton. But the problem is it's a 1-0 win that you'd expect when you're a team in the middle of the table going to the top of the table side the way we played. But ultimately, it is 3 points. It is a good thing. But until we sort of beat a decent team, it doesn't change anything with regards to my view on sort of Lambert's future. And like I say, if we don't beat either of Peterborough or Sunderland in the next two games, then the trigger has to be pulled for me.
And Craig, did we learn anything tactically about this game, or was, to Joe's point about the squad, the team selection, is this for you just, I don't want to put words in your mouth, this felt like do what it takes to get the 3 points. This was a short term, this is a sticking plaster victory, isn't it? Or was there anything there apart from the return from injury of quite a few key players, which is obviously a really good thing and actually might make a real impact in the next couple of weeks against better opposition? But do we take anything apart from the 3 points, as Joe said, as a positive to build on?
Are there any green shoots, you mean? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
No, there weren't, were there, really? Other than, as you say, it's the return to fitness. As we know, and as we've spoken about many, many, many times before, there are no real tactics. There is no real pattern of play. So you are now reliant on those guys who are coming back to fitness, Edwards, Bishop in the main, the guys who took us up to the top of the league at the beginning of the season. You're now relying on them doing something off the cuff in the next half of a season to propel us back up the league again, aren't you? That's pretty much what we're resting the rest of our season on.
Yeah, we need to go back to the Blackpool rapid fire long range shot approach, which, you know, worked against Blackpool, didn't it? But yeah, Norwood for me was isolated. He worked hard yesterday, but was again isolated. It doesn't seem to matter who plays in that one up top on their own. There just isn't bodies around.
Nobody near him. No, absolutely nobody near him. And as I was saying about the guys who are they're trying to get in, well, it's all very well getting them in, but if they're going to play in that system, then they're going to be as toothless as the guys who are currently there.
Hmm. And I think the problem with the system that we've got is that it's not just a couple of roles where it asks so much of the players. It's almost every role on the pitch. The fullbacks have to be able to get up and down the whole pitch all game, defend a whole flank on their own effectively, and contribute in an attacking sense. The wingers have to be able to get back while also get close to strike and be creative. Again, tough roles, which the striker is so isolated. He has to play such a tough role. The most forward of the midfielders is being relied on to effectively carry the ball in tight spaces, beat three or four men to make anything happen. Dazelle is just a passenger at times defensively, which means his partner, whether it be Flynn Downes yesterday or Emma Hughes last week, has such a big workload to do. It means that almost every player on the pitch needs to be at the top of their, needs to be a top player in the league and at the top of their game, just so the system doesn't fall down.
Yeah, and you've got two sitting midfielders there as well, and you kind of think, I get away at Burton. Is that really the way to go? I know Downs kind of marauds a little bit and Dazelle goes looking for the ball, but I just wonder whether a 4-3-3 yesterday, a proper 4-3-3, might have been the better way to go.
But then if you do that, you can't really play Dazelle in that team.
Yeah.
So well, it's we try and get him into the team, but ultimately, if you want to play him deep, we saw it against Swindon. You need somebody alongside him. When we played Burton at home, Emir Hughes played a lot deeper and sat alongside him. When we played him away, Flynn Downes is the one that sat alongside him. But he needs some strength, some physicality, some defensive nous, some running alongside him. Otherwise, we're just very easy to attack against if he doesn't have that.
It feels like more questions than answers, which is almost the perfect segue, as if I planned it, for our listener questions. Steve Jackson, goal projection, always a good follow, post some really interesting stats. Why does Lambert keep switching the goalkeepers? I know context is important, but I think Holy has clearly been our best League One goalkeeper, and he's posted some stats about goals conceded, XG conceded, and win percentage, and Holy has got the highest win percentage out of Cornell. He's also put Norris in there. Your thoughts about the flip-flopping and the goalkeeper? Did I say Craig? Or I wanted to go to Joe because he's got the goalkeeper top on, but either of you can answer it.
Yeah. I think last year it seemed that Holy started the season well, which meant that Lambert couldn't bring in Norris, who was his preferred keeper, into the lineup. And it seemed that as soon as he had any excuse to make the change, he made it, because Holy, I think after the sort of the amazing 11 game start where we'd won 8 and drawn 3, at one point he was sort of 30 minutes away from an all-time club record when we were sort of close to setting good records rather than bad records for not conceding a goal. And we lost 2-0 at Accrington, 2-0 at Rotherham, where he didn't really do anything wrong in either game, and he was straight out of the team. And I don't know, it just seems, for whatever reason, we do seem to play better with Holy in goal, whether it's his sort of command of the area, like the fact that when he kicks a ball, it stays kicked and it gets down the upper end of the pitch away from the goal. But like I say, I thought he'd started this season, he'd looked a bit shaky, and I could see why Cornell was getting an opportunity. But ultimately, I know I was actually having this conversation on Twitter with Olimar and a couple of others yesterday, and sometimes it's just overcomplicating things. He is a keeper that has a really good clean sheet record, a really good games won record, and you can make excuses as to whether it's weaker opposition, whether he's doing enough. But ultimately, we're there to try and win games of football. And if the keeper is a is one that gives you a better chance of doing it because he keeps more clean sheets, then sometimes you just got to go with that until he really plays himself out of form.
At least exactly. And that's it. And if the keeper's one less thing to worry about, then all's well and good, isn't it? If you asked 100 Ipswich Town fans, where's the issue in our team? There's not many of them be saying, bloody Thomas Holy.
Yep.
No.
And we stopped the short passing yesterday out the back, which I think probably is, if you ask me, the way to go. But anyway.
What would Jimmy Walker think about that?
Oh, Joe. I was trying to dangle that in subtly. If you don't know what we're talking about, you'll find that on Twitter. Our goalkeeping coach dropped a view in during Liverpool Man United. Ashley Eldon, Craig. I think this is a really, really interesting thought as well about, you know, green shoots and a long-term plan with Lambert in charge. Who or what has Lambert improved in his time here? I'll focus you in on the who. We've talked about, you know, the community stuff and the PR when he was first joined to the club. But who, in your opinion, has their game has been brought on by working under Lambert and his coaching team?
I can't think of anyone. I saw this question and I can't think of anybody. Nobody that isn't of an age where they wouldn't have improved in any case because they're just getting older and more experienced through virtue of playing more matches. People like Downs, for example. I couldn't think of a player that's got any better through the coaching that they would have received. Not that you can, you know, quantitatively look at and come back with any sort of evidence. Other than just over a period of time, just getting better because you're getting older.
I think that might be a little unfair to Lambert because ultimately he does have to be the one that plays them, and Downs and sort of Andre Dizel this season, where he's actually been given a long run in the team, are things that, yes, they've improved, but he's put them in a position to allow them to improve. It's quite easy just to take all the credit away from him, but ultimately he is the manager that is allowing them to play, and they are playing well.
He's only picking them though, isn't he?
He is.
If you're saying they're getting minutes, then the reason why they're getting better is because they're getting minutes.
But he could easily not be playing Andre Dizel this year, couldn't he? You could easily have set up a midfield three with Nolan. Well, obviously Scooter's injured. Bishop, Hughes. He could have gone with a more experienced player.
I was going to say, to Craig's point,
you're giving him more game experience, aren't you?
That was my point, though, wasn't it? He's getting better because he's playing. He's not being coached to become a better play. You know, he's just getting it through the virtue of playing more often than
and Andre Dizel's abilities are largely innate, aren't they, as well? I suspect most of what he does is unconscious. Those, you know, the unlock the door through ball passes, I'm sure those,
you know,
come from
Dizel,
the training ground.
If Dizel was getting coached better, he'd be getting better defensively.
True.
Maybe.
Jury's out on that one, Ashley. Mark Rogers, I mean, these kind of questions are inevitable, Joe, and it's just luck of the draw that I'm doing alternates and this one's come to you. Would you rather, this is from Mark Rogers, would you rather win against Peterborough and Sunderland or lose them both but Lambert goes? I'll ask you both about that one.
If we win it, like it's difficult because it's one of those sort of hypothetical questions, like if a supermodel asked you out on a date, would you go on it? And it's like, well, I'd probably wouldn't check my wife because it's not going to happen. And that's how I feel about the wins against Peterborough and Sunderland. But ultimately, if we beat Peterborough and we beat Sunderland and we beat them in a manner that sort of suggests that a corner has been turned, then yeah, that's what we'd all want as fans. But I just don't for one second see it. I'd be amazed if we win one of those games, let alone both of them.
Yeah. Craig, are you similar on that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
If we lose both of them, he's going to go anyway, probably, isn't he? Or not?
God,
or does that win yesterday, on Saturday, buy him more time?
We all know, as I said on Twitter, we all know we were going to, even before yesterday, we all knew we were going to scrape a win against Burton, probably lose against Posh because they always seem to dick us, and then draw, because Sunderland draw everything 1-1. It's just the way it's going to be. Get your money on it now. I think if we were to lose both matches, I don't think we would be a million miles away from the top six, you know, because everyone is beating everybody and it is still stupidly condensed. And we've been on a pretty, well, hot and cold run and are still within touching distance of the playoffs. So if that is the cause to have the sticking plaster ripped off, then Yeah, probably I'd go for that.
The issue with these fixtures, and this was the problem last year, is losing not only hurts your chances, you're giving points to the teams around
points.
You. You'd be better off. I would take not losing both of these matches as being a positive, really, because they don't go further away from us, do they?
Well, Sunderland are below us at the moment, aren't they? So if we lose to them and also lose to Peterborough, we're going to be 4 or 5 points off the playoffs at that point, and we're going to have lost two more games against promotion contenders. And like I say, Portsmouth have kept 5 clean sheets in a row against us, Hull, I think Peterborough as well. Like they've kept 5 clean sheets against 3 of the top sides, if you include us in that. And that gap is just going to start to grow between the top two and us in the sort of fighting for the top six. And it's like, we shouldn't be fighting for a top six place. We should be fighting for the title. That should be the aim. What's the point of aiming to getting a 1 in 4 chance of getting promoted? The aim should be the top two. And we should be judging our progress against where we sit against the top two, not where we sit against the top six.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Craig, James Chidwick, trying to be positive. Good for you, James. You're doing better than the host. Could you let Lambert off saying it was a win? A good run out for players who've been injured and lack match sharpness before 2 crucial games.
Yeah,
you could, couldn't you?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And we did say that, didn't we? So that if it's minutes in the legs for Downs and Bishop and Edwards in the main, who you're going to be relying on to do most of the attacking and creation of chances in the next couple of matches, then yeah. So you know, let's see where we are in what, 10 days' time.
And Dav Blue's question, what are the green shoots that Evan sees? I think we've dealt with that more holistically when he said it at the time. But the green shoots surely are the likes of Bishop and Edwards, who actually are game changers themselves. Coming
they
back
are
to
hanging everything,
fitness.
Aren't they? They are hanging absolutely everything on injuries and people returning from injury and that being it. You know, every press conference, Lambert's mentioning injuries more than he's mentioning Germany at the moment. That shows you how much propaganda there is being thrown.
We get club updates from the training ground, it seems, every day. Where normally when the sort of interviewers and the media ask about injuries, it's like, don't know, oh, he's on the grass, oh, I think he's okay, oh, I think I saw him yesterday. Now it's club website, oh, these guys are back in training today. These guys are back today.
Nolo
might be back Friday.
Nolo's coming back.
Nolo is yoloing with his training account at the moment.
Joe, Tig asks, we scored as the change was made, but have you ever seen a bizarre front two as Drinan and Hawkins? Both good at holding the ball up, but neither is the player you'd want it held up for. He's got a point, isn't he? We talked about
it. Well, that's what we said earlier, isn't it? Why those two ahead of Jackson? It has to be one of those two and Jackson, because if that game goes and they're our front two, what are we going to do?
Chris London, a London tractor boy. Well, that was crap. I can't believe how many times I've said that after winning the past 2 years. Why do we keep on playing high balls to a lone striker to flick onto their sweeper? Toto played well, and Chambers was the only one to run through the thirds with the ball. I think to get the ball. I'm not sure he had the ball at his feet for most of it, but.
Yeah, I think Bishop did to start with. I thought I was really impressed with the way Bishop started the match. And you could actually see he was jinking past. He was almost back to his jinking best. But yeah, so I completely agree with Chris there. I think
won quite a lot of free kicks as well, didn't he, Bishop?
And thankfully we're so good from free kicks. They pretty much all resulted in a shot on target, didn't they?
but you look at like the last 11-12 games. We've won 4 games, and it's that. That win against Shrewsbury where they were awful and we nicked it right at the very end. The Plymouth away win where we only scored when they went down to 10 men. The Burton home win where sort of nicked a 2-1 with a late goal. But in fairness, we did dominate that game and did deserve to win that one. And then yesterday where we've nicked one. So we've won 4 times in 10 games, all against sides that were, well, 3 of them against teams that were in the relegation zone at the time and 1 against... sort of Plymouth. It's like we're just beating the crap and we're not beating them well either. And it's they sort of say a side of a good team is when they win but don't play well. You're not a good team if you never play well, are you, though?
That's Danny Cowley said on the EFL Quest show, was a sign of a good side. And then he mentioned, I think someone mentioned, then we had Peterborough and Sunderland coming up next. FPL Tractor, Joe, I'll come back to you. It was tough fought. But do you think we deserved to win that relegation 6-pointer? FPL's Tractor, no words, not mine.
I don't know that we did deserve to win it, to be honest. I just I just had a look at the XG on the game.
Burton create score those chances, don't they?
We were 0.5 or 0.6. They were 0.8. It was a game of very limited quality from both sides, and it was going to take sort of a scrappy goal was going to win it. We got the scrappy goal. Chambers managed to make the good block to stop their scrappy goal, and ultimately it was just a game of very, very little quality decided by... I wouldn't even say it was decided by a moment of quality, was it? It was decided by
right
a
place,
goal
right
for fitting the match, a shit free kick that deflected up to somebody who was free.
Yeah. I'm trying to find positive stuff. I really am, but I'm not going to pretend that something... I'm not like Paul Lambert. I'm not disingenuous. Skip through some of these. Scoey 75, I think we've dealt with your question about Lambert swapping formation quotes. Crabwalk, Craig, who will leave the club first, Lambert or Wolfenden? The new person, persona non grata.
Well, a bit like Joe. I don't have quite as many entries into the changing room as dressing room as Joe does, but a friend of a friend has a contact with Luke, and yeah, pretty much backs up what Joe's been saying about harmony and people getting along, etc. But Lambert will go 27th of January.
Is that what you were looking? I was wondering where you were looking before. Is there a calendar?
Yeah,
I've
got a calendar. As long as Wolfenden is not sold before the 27th of January, then it'll outlast him. Yeah.
We need
If Lambert instead of Marcus Evans was in charge of transfer policy, I'd imagine the answer might be different.
Paul Westlake, from what I can see, a deflection, albeit a good finish, has saved Lambert for another week. I think you've said that. Love to hear best 11. I think we get asked that a lot. I don't think we've got the time to do best 11s, but I think we're close, aren't we, with that team? Apart from Vincent Young, perhaps? Is that the strongest team on paper?
I do think with Vincent Young at the moment, you almost need to...
Write him off?
Not write him off, but forget about him for the very near future, because he's had another setback. He's not being mentioned by the club at all, which means he's 3, 4, 5 weeks away at best. That's 10 games time, in reality. You just can't... If we get 10 starts out of him this season, I'll be amazed. I'm not one of those who's going over the top and saying, oh, we'll never see him in an Ipswich shirt again. But ultimately, if he starts 10 games for us this season, it's going to be a massive surprise.
I think that 11 is pretty much as good as it. Maybe you'd play Judge. I thought Judge played quite well last week, didn't he, in the number 10 when he was actually playing in the final 30. I thought he did quite well. But in terms of 11 fit players being available, that starting 11 yesterday is pretty much as good as it's going to get, I'd have thought.
I wonder with regards to, because we're not... We seem to go away from passing out from the back a lot more at the moment, whether you end up going Downs in a deeper role with sort of Nolan and Bishop in front of them to try and get a little bit more goal for it.
I just wanted to flip it around. There's a question here, and apologies in advance because I'll get your name wrong. You need to tweet me to how to pronounce it. I'm going to go for Sindre Eliasson. Do you think the starting 11 yesterday on paper is the most underachieving Ipswich Town side ever? Let's bring the negativity. Oh, my light's gone off. That's fine. I'd say so, at least for as long as I follow the club. Games like that only fade and become a battle because we let it happen. Poor management. Ian Aitchison adds dropping the possession type of game is welcome too, but why not two up front? Your thoughts on Sindra's point about most underachieving side, given the potential strength that we've talked about, and the two up front. Who wants to say that?
Well, I think the underachieving side, I think it's difficult because we're in a league which we expected or hoped to get out of last year, and we didn't expect to come 11th in it, and we don't expect to come 11th in it again this year, which is looking like it could happen. So almost every player, you look at it, you got in goal, Holy has done fine, really. Chambers has obviously been a good player for us in the Championship, and his sort of career is winding down a bit now. Ward started well, hasn't been great for a long time, really, for me. Toto was bought in as a £800,000 centre-back and has been pretty rubbish, generally. He's had some decent games this year, but he's been a poor signing in the long term. He signed as a Championship defender, remember. McGuinness, can't really say anything about him. Dizel burst onto the scene at 16, and now 5-6 years later he's finally establishing himself in the team. Judge has been a massive disappointment. Norwood's coming in on the back of 30 goals a season and has been sort of more renowned for what he's done off the field than on the field since he's been here. Edwards was brought in as a championship winger, and bar a good run of form this year, has done very little. I say every player is really underachieved from what we expected of them, but I guess that's to be expected when you are a mid-table League One side.
And Craig, finally on the 4-4-2 point from Ian, Lambert is pretty clear that we're not going to change formation now, are we? But are you an advocate for the 4-4-F-2, given how isolated the striker is?
Yeah. I think, as you say, Lambert's gone on record to say we can't play with two up front, or we're useless at it, whatever his comment was. But I just wonder, sort of as Joe's alluded to just a little while ago, is once Downs is back and fully fit, you could then play two central midfielders in a 4-4-2. I don't think you can play Dizel in a 4-4-2. You know, he doesn't do enough in, you know, as the central, as two, one of a central two. Whereas if you had Nolan and Downs as your central two, then you probably could get away with it. And therefore, you know, release someone to play up front alongside Norwood or Hawkins or whoever. I think that's, I wouldn't be surprised if we do it once Downs is fully up to speed and fit and firing, then Nolan maybe as well, that we do try it.
Do you think he'd do that?
Bishop did it in the sort of playoff season. He played in the two that a lot that season, didn't he? So,
yeah.
Like I say, you need to be quite a complete midfielder to play in a two, in a 4-4-2. You've got to have legs. That is one of the key things you've got to have.
Yeah. I think it's Dizel that's stopping them from playing two up front.
Interesting. We'll end on this one from Tim. Sorry to Tom, Lee, Peck and Blue. All really good questions. I think we've dealt with most of them, and all their quite long hypothetical kind of low slow burn questions that I don't think we have time for. But let's deal with this one from Tim, because it helps with the looking ahead to Peter and Sunderland to help me get back on time. Given the league position and the games played by all situation, does the tunnel still have a light flickering at the end, or will the form v top half clubs, aka Peterborough and Sunderland in the next two, snuff it out? I'll go to both of you, but I'll start with Joe.
For me, the light flickering at the end of the tunnel is the fact that the league has been pretty average so far. A lot of teams beating everybody, that even though we've not done great and we've not beaten anyone yet, we're still in a decent position. But the reason the light flickers for me is that we've got a tough run of games coming up in sort of Peterborough, Sunderland and then Crewe after that, that if Lambert can't pick up the results, we're still going to have half a season left for a new manager to come in and have another go at it. And I genuinely don't think there's many managers out there that could be doing a worse job at the moment.
And Greg, is there any light at the end of the tunnel apart from a P45 for Mr. Lambert?
Yeah, well, it's you know, without wishing to toe the club line, it's a return of injuries, I suppose, that everyone seems to be hanging their hat on. And that's pretty much it. Unless the light at the end of the tunnel is showing the scuffle between the players that was had between management and players after Swindon.
No mutiny. Nothing to see here. Gentlemen, thank you for answering those questions. And thank you to all of you for pinging the questions in. Really helpful. Shaping the debate. Always good. And apologies if we didn't have time to read yours out. Let's just do a quick roundup before we finish off. Let me focus on the top half of results. Lincoln still lead the way. I think they... Do they have a day off? I think they had a postponement. Lincoln, so I don't think they played. Hull, it was a 1-1 draw for them against Blackpool, whose form's dropped away, having had a bit of an unbeaten run there, Blackpool. I think they've regressed back to mid-table. Portsmouth, 1-0 victors over managerless. I think they're still managers. Fleetwood, Joey Bartonless, Fleetwood Town. Doncaster on a bit of a run as well. They lost their last game, but... 4 wins out of 5 for them, and they saw off Swindon, who are back into their normal normal mode for Swindon, and Peterborough, opponents next week, comfortable victors over MK Dons. Some nice goals in there. Dembele looked good. Smodic should have had a bit of a run without scoring, scored twice I think, so perfect timing for them to get back on form. And then we mentioned Sunderland behind Ipswich. And that was my fault. I didn't spot that they were still behind. I thought Streaky Lee would have got them sorted, but they've no defeats in the last. They're unbeaten in the last five, mostly draws, as we said. But a 3-0 win away at AFC Wimbledon, hat trick for Charlie Wyke. Accrington still amongst it, but they lost to Gillingham. So as we said, the league is all over the place. And a special mention to the entertainment yesterday was at Rochdale, 3-3 draw with them for Wigan, and a nice teed up. Keepy uppy kind of goal for Will Keane. You can still find him. Worth a look on Twitter or YouTube for that one. Ipswich are seventh, 20 games played, 35 points, just outside the playoffs. Two games in hand on Charlton, who are 1 point above them. But yeah, I think reading into the league table, I think at this stage is pretty pretty useless given all of the games and postponements and so on. But all of the top eight. Won or drew yesterday if they played. So it's maybe tightening up, who knows. But that's it, and that is the end of the pod. We've talked about Sunderland, and we talked about Peterborough. Anyone predicting anything other than Peterborough victory next week? I'll just throw it out there.
I just don't see us being able to stop them from scoring, and we don't have any goals in us. That's
Peterborough are lethal, issue. Aren't they? That's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah. They always look good against us as well, don't they? They always seem to turn it on against us.
That 4-1 defeat to them at home was a real low point of last season, wasn't it?
Smodic as well played well, didn't he? If he's coming back to form, it doesn't bode well.
I think it's Ben who is back hosting next week for the pod, so keep a lookout for him and whoever else is. I'm sure one of you two guys will be back on. Yeah, you can find us at Blue Monday ITFC on the Twitter. We're on Instagram, Blue Monday Pod Team. We're on the YouTube podcast. You can get us on Spotify, Google, Acast, Apple, all the big names on there. Give us a subscribe. Give us a review if you want as well. I was trawling through the reviews of the podcasts, and there's some 5 stars in there, some interesting not 5-star reviews as well. Keep us entertained by giving us a review. Always appreciate those. Guys,
so make sure they're 5-star.
Make sure. Well, yeah, exactly right. 5-star.
Rain or shine, leave us a 5-star review.
Exactly right. Joe, where can we find you on Twitter? The Academy, is COVID kind of impacting?
Was supposed to be a game yesterday, but it was cancelled because of the snow that turned up Saturday morning. We're due to be playing Colchester, but it's the FA Youth Cup has been put on hold, so which is a shame for the youngsters because we obviously were on a decent run in that. So, like I said, there's due to be games. I think there's another 23s game this week, but it's whether these games go ahead. I'm sure there's going to be quite a few cancelled at relatively short notice as the fixtures pile up.
And Craig, where can we find you?
Fims75.
Excellent. And you can find me at Ipswich. And that is your lot. Thank you for listening. I said I wasn't going to drag it out, and I'm 10 minutes overrun, so 10%. Extra? No, it's not right. My maths is crap. I'm going to end it there. My
16%.
Brain's enough. Thank you very much, Joe. Who wants to have the final words? Does anyone want to have the final word? Has anyone got anything clever to say?
Roll on, Peterborough.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.